Presently, there is a global wage discrimination for women. This discrimination is happening at all levels, from the BBC downwards. It is illegal. Women, it is time to negotiate a better deal. But first of all, you need the tools, a guide, and some practice. Today, I'm welcoming onto Gorgeous Entrepreneurs a highly qualified coach and EQ practitioner. She is the founder and CEO of Diadem Performance. It is a leading commercial skills training company and has helped thousands of people learn negotiational skills. She is Nicole Soames, and her book is The Negotiation Book, Practical Steps to Becoming a Master Negotiator or a Mistress Negotiator. So, Nicole, welcome. So let's start from the very beginning.
Yes.
Hi and welcome. Sorry, hi. What is a negotiator?
A negotiator is somebody who is able to communicate in such a way that they can find compromise and overlap in positions with their position and the other person's position. That's fundamentally what it is. So it's a communication skill, but most people don't think of it as a communication skill. They think of it as bartering in the market, or they think of it in the context of the last time they bought a really important purchase for themselves, like a car or a property. But actually, it's an everyday communication skill.
Yeah, so when do we use it without knowing?
Well, you use it every day. So when somebody asks you to do something for you and you're not aware that you're being asked, you may end up giving your time or your resources or something away and not getting something back in return.
And feeling a little bit annoyed about it.
Well, you might do. If you've got awareness, you might do afterwards. And that feeling of being conned or going, I can't believe I just did that and didn't get back anything back in return. And I'm not saying that you should always operate in a quid pro quo basis, but actually you do need to be valued, and your time and your resource should be valued.
And especially now, because women, you know, this equal pay thing is so serious. And one of the problems is women find things like negotiating harder than men. Why do you think that is?
I think because too often women suffer from what is called imposter syndrome, and they talk themselves down. They're much more likely to talk themselves down. And look, a lot of people, men, and I meet plenty of men that also aren't equipped to negotiate. So I don't necessarily think it's a gender thing. I think it's a personality and a confidence thing. And a lot of people aren't confident enough to talk about money. Plus, they've never been trained at it. So if you've never been trained in how to jump the high jump, you'd probably be crapping yourself about doing it. So if no one's ever told you how to do it, you've got to make it up as you go along. And I think that's part of the challenge. People don't know how to do it, so it's fear of the unknown. But men are more likely to just go for it and worry about it afterwards, whereas women worry before they do it and they talk themselves out of it. But often I think it's a male challenge as well. It's a confidence challenge.
Okay, so what's the first step to learn to negotiate?
The first step, I think, is to value to know what it is and what the definition is, which is about finding this overlap in positions. And to also know that if you don't ask, you don't get. And you can't moan about it. So actually, I can't think of the name of the lady from the BBC who's just...
The Chinese reporter.
Yeah. She's actually been really brave to make her stance. And I think a lot of people aren't brave enough. So first of all, you've got to be aware of the situation you're in. And you've got to know that it's actually a negotiation opportunity. And also not be upset that if you didn't ask for that pay rise, or you didn't put that context on the table, then you shouldn't get upset about it. So it's no good moaning about the gender pay gap if you're not prepared to do anything about it. So first of all, I think awareness plays a big part. Second of all, I think you have to feel like an equal in the conversation. And again, I think that's where a lot of women struggle. They don't feel like they can have an adult-to-adult conversation. They feel that they're stuck in a master-servant scenario. And you actually need to feel, if you're going to have a good outcome in a negotiation, you have to feel balanced. And then you have to have the confidence to ask. And I think fundamentally, as a mindset, Those are three things that you need to take into consideration. And then once you've got your head around that stuff, you've got to prepare. And so most people don't prepare. And when they think about negotiating, going back to what I was saying, they think about it in the context of money.
Yeah, it's immediately what I think.
Immediately.
Because I asked for some money recently for somebody and they immediately said, yes, I'll pay you that. And I thought, oh, why did I go in so low, you know?
So the next time, so what a master negotiator would do is they would first recognise that they did that and they had that feeling.
Yeah.
And the next time they would make sure that they recognise, oh, this is another situation that is similar to that. And you would consciously plan next time to ask for some more. And that's called ambition. And it's about judging what is an appropriate level of ambition. But it's also interesting to reflect and unpick what made you pitch your ask at that level.
Because I find money in particular, and I know you say we negotiate in all things, but money is obviously one that is very applicable here. Money I find embarrassing. Am I worth it? Is this worth it? You know, I just, money is so difficult to bring up. It makes me squirm.
And so you,
is that a normal thing?
It is really, it's really common that people don't like talking about money because they feel sometimes that that might get in the way of the relationship that you're trying to establish with the other person. So it's almost like a dirty word and you're worried what they may think about. You may be worried what they may think about you. So the reality is, though, you do get what you pay for in life. And if you sell yourself too cheap, then you may be almost communicating that you're not worth that value. And that's not a good thing to think about on reflection. So you just got to be braver. And that's why I bring into my book and I try and help people access emotional intelligence when they are facing into these negotiation situations. And being brave is part of emotional intelligence, it's part of ambition. And if you've got to retrain your brain that if you don't ask for the right level, you're not going to get the right level.
And so then you ask for a little bit over then?
Yeah. In principle, you should ask for, well, if we're going to get really technical, let's get technical about it. So really, in theory, your preparation around money should be, okay, I'm going to, my ideal position is this level. That's my ideal position. So you say that to yourself first. Ideally, and this is inner chatter, not external chatter, which we'll come on to, I'm sure, in a bit. But you say to yourself, what's the idea? What's the top end of my happy zone? And then you set that position in your mind. And then you say, you have to know that in order to achieve that, you have to ask for more than that.
Okay.
And your judgment around what is the highest believable position that's got credibility, so don't get laughed out the door and also feel bad about it. So that's what you need to plan. Most people don't do that. What they do is if they do any thinking, they'll think about what their ideal position is. They don't really consciously think about it. And so when they start the conversation, they may sort of wiffily-waffily position it that maybe it might be acceptable if you could possibly think about taking this level of pricing from me. And they effectively are...
They're already saying sorry, aren't they?
They are already being subservient, apologising, and actually...
Muttering, sort of talking too much.
I call that weak speak. Because you are literally weakening your position. And you are saying, I'm open to you for you to knock me down. And I'm such a believer in the cliche that people buy people. And I think cliches are cliches because they're true. Yeah,
like tourist places are always good because they're beautiful. That's my favourite.
It's so funny. Yeah. It's so true. Yeah, yeah. And so, but actually let go, you know, just doesn't matter. People buy people. And what I think that means is they're buying into your confidence. So if you communicate not in a confident way, actually you are potentially communicating to them that you're not that good at what you do. So and you've got to get the balance right, because I am not saying you should be arrogant. I am saying appropriate levels of confidence. So that's why in terms of your preparation for the level you're going to go in at, you have to go, what's the top end of my happy zone? What's the highest believable position that's got credibility? So I've now given myself a zone in which to negotiate. And then also I need to set myself the bottom end of my happy zone. So I'd be gutted if they accepted less than that. And I was trained very formally in negotiating, and a lot of very theoretical, very process, very Harvard Business School negotiation training will say you must have a fallback position, you must have a walkaway position.
Ridiculous.
And I fundamentally disagree with that. Having negotiated many, many times through my career, I just think if you set yourself up with that sort of mindset, you're actually setting yourself up for failure. If you think about the language, what's my fallback position? What's my walkaway position? And you have to think about all the Brexit conversations that are going on at the moment. You're actually setting yourself up for failure. So I think it's much, much better to consciously set yourself the bottom end of your happy zone.
I like where it's happy zone.
And I would be disappointed if I got less than that. You can still end up agreeing something slightly less than that if it was still the right thing to do for that situation. All of this thinking takes preparation. It takes investment in time to think about these things. You can't just do it on the hoof because none of us are that clever. We really need to put effort into the preparation, and not just around commercials, around all the other stuff that could be negotiable.
Yeah. Can we just go on back to emotional intelligence? Can you tell us some things that you've learned, a few tips?
So you have to, emotional intelligence is one of those things that's quite ethereal and it's quite out there and it sounds so highfalutin. What actually is it? Really, EQ, which is the shorthand version of what emotional intelligence is a set of social skills and emotional skills that help you influence others. That's really fundamentally what those things are. And you can break that down into four buckets. So a lot of it's about awareness. So awareness of yourself and awareness of the other person and how, and awareness of the situation. So that's an awareness bucket. Then there's the bucket of social skills, which is relationship building and empathy and being able to listen. Then there's ambition, which is about appropriate levels of optimism, and it's about setting the right levels of the right goals for yourself. And then there's the whole bucket of self-management.
Now this interests me.
Which is, in my experience, and I could be wrong, but in my quite extensive experience, is never trained in the context of negotiating. And if you are not in control and managing yourself, it does take two to tango in a negotiation. So often people come to me and they say, they're doing this, they're doing that. And actually, some of the issue may be to do with you. So self-management is stuff like self-confidence. We've already touched a little bit on confidence. Self-management is about self-control.
Yes, that's what I find difficult, self-control.
And the self-control thing in the context of negotiating is being disciplined in your approach and controlling your emotions. So I'm saying you need to use emotional intelligence when you negotiate.
You not get angry with them.
Not get angry. Or unless, you know, if you are going to get angry, you do it in a controlled way. But then don't overthink it, don't overcomplicate it. And sometimes people use emotion inappropriately in a negotiation, a bit like children do. So they lose control and they start to use tactics, or what I call gameplay, to stamp their authority and get their own way. And that's that, going back to that master-servant thing. So if I try and bully them, and if you think about this gender scenario that we're facing, or, you know, you only had to watch the Golden Globes the other day and listen to Oprah's brilliant speech, I think that being in control of yourself and being aware and spotting these behaviours and then facing into them is really important. And it couldn't be more important in negotiation. People play games.
Yeah, I want to talk about the games. So can you tell us some games that people might use against you in a negotiating scenario?
So I think people sometimes do it subconsciously. They don't know they're doing it. So in a very formal set piece negotiation where you are negotiating a contract, or you're in a formal bid scenario, in a business scenario, then you may get things like, well, all the others have said they'll give it to us for this rate, everyone else does it like this. Or they may say to you that you don't know what you're doing. or that your proposition isn't strong enough, or they may use something that you've done in the past which didn't go so well to make you feel bad about this new proposition because they think it may be your Achilles heel.
So they're putting you on the back foot.
Totally.
So why are they doing that?
So they do that to soften you, to tap into that imposter syndrome, so that when it comes to talking about the overlapping positions, you're more likely to be weakened. So they either do it consciously or subconsciously. Like my kids do it to me. They soften me up before we're going shopping and guilt trip me.
Yeah. So haven't that they got can, this, haven't got that.
Yeah, everybody else has, you know, the comparison. Everybody else has got them. Oh, I'll be the only one. You know, those sorts of things. And they've not been trained in negotiation. They're just doing it because, you know what? Normally it works. They'll catch me off guard. And that's what... So how can we not expect people to do it in the workplace if our blooming kids do it to us at home? So...
What are the other things they do? And what are the other things that you find that people have done?
They will bully. You know, if we go on to talk about this sort of... this gender gap, they will use people's scenario and their situations against them to try and make them feel bad. They'll make those comparisons.
What about being late and things like that?
Oh, yes. Leave you waiting in reception for ages. Mm. Or they'll do things like they may be... I mean, this happens a lot in the workplace.
Yeah.
But they'll be on their phone in a meeting or they'll be taking messages. Or, you know,
so that
they'll...
That makes you feel again like you're not worth it.
Not worthy to be sat there. So I need to now wait for you to get off your phone. It's rude.
Yeah.
And yet... people allow it to happen. So worst case scenario is you don't even notice it's happening. So you just accept, oh, it's okay. I'll be left waiting in reception for 45 minutes. I don't, you know,
I'm
subtext.
Not worth it.
I'm not worth it. I don't value my time. Mm. They are now the master. Mm. I am there to fulfill a role. Therefore, it's okay for me to be left waiting. So worst case scenario is you don't even recognise it's happening. That's one. Sometimes people go, well, I know it's happening, but I think it's best to ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's sleep, you know, I'll water off a duck's back. I'll just let that go. I don't like conflict, so I don't want to say something.
Mm.
So I'll just let it go. But neither of those things is going to help the scenario.
Or make you feel good inside.
Well, they don't make you feel good inside. Mm. But actually, worse than that, I think it gives the other person permission to do that to you.
Even if
you're saying, no, it doesn't bother me, it doesn't affect me, I am protecting myself from that, actually it communicates to them in an unsaid way, well, they're there to be, they don't mind me putting them down. And it probably isn't conscious.
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, unless it's by design, it might not be conscious.
Okay, so it happens. So when we walk into the meeting, what do we first say then about the lateness? Do we assert ourselves immediately? Oh, gosh, I'm so sorry you held me up because I really can't be with you for that long because I've got another very important business meeting to get to.
Well, that's actually not necessarily a bad approach, but you have to pick, and this is where the EQ comes in. You have to... First of all, I try and help people recognise, number one, that it's happening. Expect and anticipate it to happen so you are ready to be in control of yourself and know how you are going to not react but respond. Because a reaction is almost like attack is a better form of defence.
Yeah.
And it could be seen as defensive versus responding is more controlled. So you would then consider the person that you're seeing. So do I know them? What's their personality like? How might they react to something I would say? And therefore, what's the most appropriate thing for me to do? And also think about your own personality and know that if they keep you waiting, is it going to wind you up? or are you just going to go, you know what, I'm cool about that. So preparation, not just for the commercials, preparation for this stuff and the behaviours is as important.
Wow.
And then you've got to pick the right response to communicate to them that what they're doing or saying to you is not appropriate. Because if you don't actually say something or communicate to them that it's not acceptable, you're giving license to them to carry on doing it. And it may not be that one, but it may be something else. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So it might not be that you have to say, you know, well, actually, I've got another more important meeting to go to, because in a way, that's now putting them on the back foot. And sometimes fighting fire with fire is going to end up with an inferno.
Yeah, and actually, they'll just think, oh, I don't like her.
And that's not the point of that's not the point of this self-control. Yeah. The point of this is to actually just say, in an unsaid way, we're adults here, and let's get on. We're talking about what we're both here to talk about. So it depends on the situation.
Okay. So what would be, what's your stock kind of thing that you do that's kind of quite neutral, but you've been left waiting? How would you deal with it, Nicole?
Well, I'd first of all decide whether I thought it was a tactic and gameplay, or actually genuinely were they late? So that's the first thing I need to judge. Are they just taking the mickey, or are they doing it by design? If I thought, and I used to have to do, I used to have to deal with the supermarkets, very formal negotiation setting, suppliers, retailer. It was the game that they always kept, you always went to see them, they always kept you waiting in reception. So that's the context. So I used to use humour quite a lot. And I would say things to them like, God, it's worse than waiting in my doctor's surgery in your reception. Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant, I've been able to catch up with all them, all those people in my network that I haven't been able to see. I would say something
kind of light,
treat it as a game, because it was, it would communicate to them, I know the game and it's not phasing me. And should we get on with talking about what we're here to talk about? So I wouldn't back myself into a corner by saying, well, I haven't got time to see you now, because actually it's my job is to see them and to have a commercial conversation about something. I don't want to do that, but I actually, all I need to do is just communicate in an unsaid way or a said way that I know that game and it doesn't faze me, and should we get on with talking about business? So you have to say something that balances off that playing field, and you have to be confident enough to say something and then have the control to move the conversation on. Anyway, the good thing is we've now got another 20, we've at least got 20 minutes so we can have a meaningful conversation. Let's get on with it. And I would segue into the meeting that way. So can you see how that's emotionally intelligent, but you're still commercially intelligent, because you're not going to back yourself into a corner. And you know what? People respect you for it.
You're also treating them as an equal, because you're going in with a joke, and that means that you're sort of like, hey, we're all mates here.
Yeah. You know? And it may be that matey isn't the right structure. So it may be that, you know, that's in keeping with my personality, but I would have considered if it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, if you'd never met them before,
you might not, you know, if you'd never met them before, you might not do that. And so that's why I say you have to judge first. Do you think they're doing it to play games, or actually are they just late for a meeting? And that would be inappropriate. So I would have, it would have happened several times, and the example I gave was it was by design. And actually, I think one of the big challenges people face in the workplace is that these sort of bullying behaviours, unfortunately, are politics. It's like office politics.
Office politics, I think, are the hardest thing about a job.
Absolutely right. The hardest thing, and the if you think about that piece we talked about, relationships, you can't get away from them. They are your colleagues. You see them every day.
You see them maybe more than your husband or partner.
Probably see them more than you see your family. And you probably know them sometimes. In that context, you know, you have to have a relationship with them, because we all know that the better relationship you have with people, the easier it is to get stuff done. And people will make decisions on whether they agree with you or disagree with you based on how they feel about working with you. And they will probably forget the what they work with you on, but they will massively remember how they felt about working with you. And so the relationship gets in the way. So people go, I won't say anything. I won't tell my boss that I feel really unworthy. I won't communicate to them I'm upset that everyone else is being paid more than me. And they just let it go, and they let it go. And then they get upset and they've not been brave enough, like this lady in the BBC, to do something about it.
And then resentment builds, and then maybe an explosion happens, an argument, and then they might just walk out of a job.
Or lose their job because of their behaviours and their attitudes, etc. So actually, having the skill and the mindset and the emotional intelligence to be able to read all this stuff and then have a backbone and push back appropriately is what good looks like, I think, in the workplace.
Okay, so we haven't touched on all negotiation skills because we could literally be here all day.
Oh, yes.
But let's talk about closing the deal, because I think that's what a lot of people can't do. You know, they're terrified of how we've chatted and chatted, but they just can't. I mean, you know, I've employed people, I've worked in sales situations. Some people cannot close, you know, they don't dare kind of put their cards on the table finally, do they?
Yeah, and I suppose in a way, you've even used the word selling. This is a really interesting concept, because actually negotiation is part of the selling process. And really, before you negotiate, someone needs to have sold something first. And that confidence in closing is actually more of a selling technique than a negotiation technique. Mm. The better you sell, the less you negotiate, or the less you have to negotiate. But inevitably, there will still be some finding and overlapping positions. And there should be, because you should have asked for an appropriately believable, you know, a challenging position in your sell. So it comes down to confidence. It comes down to confidence. It comes down to that ability to enter the negotiation conversations. And actually, if people understood that the negotiation is a massive buying signal,
yes,
then they would have more confidence to close.
Yes.
And
yeah, that is a buying signal.
It's a massive buying signal.
As soon as people talk about money, you know that it's... Yeah,
they're interested. Yeah. And it doesn't necessarily equal a deal. Mm. Or closure, but actually it means that they're interested enough to enter that phase of the conversation. But it's a skill, right? It's a skill like anything else, and it's a skill that can be learned, and it's about being brave, and it's about not using what I called that weak speak. I was thinking that maybe we could move forward and perhaps get to contract stage, but actually thinking about the fact that the negotiation or the closure is actually the end of the beginning.
Yes, because then you shake hands and then the work starts.
Then the work starts. Yeah. It is just the onboarding process. It's the bit that gets us ready to do what we want to do. Mm. It's the end of the beginning. It's a nice way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
And it all comes back to confidence.
So in a way, you can think, the sooner I close this, the sooner we can start serious work.
Which is actually better for both of us, because I remember I said it was about finding that overlapping positions. Yeah. And that compromise, that mutuality, is beneficial for both parties. And that's, I think, what sits at the heart of all great relationships and all great communication and all great negotiations.
Fantastic. I'm really excited about this book, but also I want to talk about you, Nicole, because you are an amazing woman. I've already found out in the first half an hour of meeting you when you walked in, really lively, really friendly. Can you tell us about Diadem, your business, and what you do?
So our business is about helping people in the commercial setting be the best they can be. And what we really try and do is help people become commercially fit for what their jobs are. Get commercially fit, make sure they're commercially agile so they can flex and adapt their style, and they can flex and adapt their skill set appropriately, and also make sure that they're commercially resilient, because the world we operate in today in the workplace is so complicated, with digital, with tech, with IT, you know,
emails,
everything.
Some people get thousands of emails a day.
So being able to be fit for those things, I think, is so important. So we try and help people access, we talk about building commercial athletes. That's what we want to do. We want to help people be the best they can be in the commercial setting. And I'm always fascinated and inspired by athletes. I love watching sports. I'm a bit sporty myself, but I love watching tennis players and skiers and any sport, really.
So you like people at the top of their game?
I like people at the top of their game, and I'm always inspired. I was actually reading an article about Victoria Pendleton the other day, who was...
Yes, did you sit in the Sunday Times?
In the Sunday Times,
we've got the same life.
So I just, you know...
Because she was saying that actually the horses are so much more rewarding, and she couldn't give a hoot about bicycles.
I was so, you know, watching all the people cycle past her in the range, been there, done that.
Yeah.
But to me, she's just inspirational. So she was top of her game in cycling.
In the whole world.
In the whole world. Mm. And she was able to have that commercial that resilience and that agility and that fitness to go, you know what, I'm going to turn my hand to something else. And then to go from riding a bike to, I think she came fifth or something in the Cheltenham.
Fifth, yeah.
Amazing. So I'm always fascinated by sports people and the way they approach their skill and their ability to become world class at what they do. And it always amazes me how in the workplace we talk about being, I want to be the best we can be, and our team want to be number one, and we want to achieve these goals, and yet we don't put in the effort
at all. We turn up a little bit late, a little bit a little bit shabby. Well, what was it? Oh, I've still got the box set going around my brain. I'm not in the mood. Oh, I've got to go into a meeting. Oh, God, where are my files? You know what I mean?
It's just this.
You kind of walk in not present. Chaotic.
Yeah, not present. Mm. And so, what Diadem's all about is about breaking that down and helping people acquire soft skills like emotional intelligence and put them into the context of what they do commercially for their day job. So they still need to be technically good at what they do, but how they do it is massively important. And so we are relentless about preparation. We drill people in the right way, a bit like your personal trainer would. Mm. We drill people on, no, do it again, that wasn't good enough. How do you prepare?
Wow, so you put them into scenarios.
We put them into scenarios, and we make sure that the scenarios are relevant and in context of what they do. And actually, the skills of the stuff that we help them with is,
yeah, can you tell us a list of what sort of
so it's everything that sits under the heading of having a confident commercial conversation. So it is about business and it is about the workplace and it's about the conversations that we have to have. And with the internet and with emails, that skill is dying.
Yes.
So we're trying to reinvigorate it and say, actually, business is about people and all of your business will be done through people. Mm. So you need to have these honed commercial conversational skills.
Especially young people in their 20s, they really haven't learned how to communicate.
Yeah, they learn how to communicate, but just in these different ways. And we need to show them that actually, if you want to get stuff done really efficiently, you need to be able to articulate and communicate your ideas. So you need to be able to sell and influence people so that you can get them to buy into your idea. You need to know how to negotiate closure. Mm. You need to know how to present in an inspiring way. You need to know how to have a really confident coaching conversation with your team to make sure that you're giving them in the moment feedback so that they can continue to develop their skills.
Very intelligent, but it does remind me slightly of sort of like drama school or something.
Yeah, I mean, those, yeah,
you know, it sounds like you're putting them in a scenario, you're setting them up, you're saying, right, go, you know, it's improvisation, it's learning skills, it's learning how to communicate.
Yeah, and I think what's different about what we do is we take their real scenario and we bring in these people and these communication and these behavioural and these emotional intelligence skills, and we put them into the context of those best practice technical skills like negotiating or like presenting.
Who's we then?
So I have a team of commercial performance trainers and coaches. And to work for Diadem, my team have had to have real authentic experience. They have to have worked in an organisation or a business to a senior level. So they've been there, done that, made all the mistakes themselves and have felt the pain of doing it right and doing it wrong. Mm. And they've had that experience and now they've qualified as coaches so that they are...
Do you train them or do they go on training courses?
Both. Mm. So they have backed themselves and they are people. Mm. So they've invested in the skill of being able to coach people. Wow. And what that means is that they are enablers. They want to help people.
Already.
Yeah. So they're already of that mindset. Mm. And those two things coming together is really, really powerful. And then they have to be energetic, emotionally intelligent themselves and want to do this work. But it's hugely inspiring to take people on this journey.
It sounds like you must have such fun together, though.
We do. Yeah, we are like-minded. We're not all the same and we all bring something different to the party. Yeah. But we've all had real experience. We're all bright, intelligent, people who like to help people.
So work every day is really exciting.
I love my job. I never take that for granted because I help a lot of people who don't necessarily enjoy what they do. Mm. And the more senior you get, I do a lot of exec coaching, and the more senior you get, the more lonely it gets.
Mm-hmm. And my husband's always lonely. And he's got 2-3 businesses. Yeah.
And people get stuck in the rut, and it becomes.
I know that myself.
In your comfort zone, comfort.
Yeah. Oh, yes, actually, I just want to talk a little bit about comfort zone, because I've always used the expression, but I didn't really know what it was till I read your book. Can you explain it? Because I found it very interesting when it went to extreme comfort zone, because I realised I go into that quite a lot.
So, I mean, there are almost like 3 different zones that we go into as humans. And just to keep it simple, so there's our comfort zone, there's our stretch zone, and then there's our panic zone. And very often people that I meet polarise. They're either in their in their panic zone, or they're in their comfort zone.
That's me.
and the thing is that your zone of optimum performance is actually your stretch zone, where you will be lifting yourself, raising the bar, consciously trying to be the best you can be. The thing is, if we're in our panic zone, it's obvious. You'll be making more mistakes, there's anxiety, it's easier to see that performance will go down. But actually, in your comfort zone, it's harder to see it. But people are more likely to be bored. When they're bored, they lower their levels of ambition, they go for less. Confidence can actually go down. But
they just become pen pushers, don't they?
Yeah, complacency can set in. Other noise and interference then gets in the way. That's when the politics start to rise.
People start falling out in the office.
Purpose. Your sparkle and your mojo goes. And then little things start to get in the... little mistakes creep in. And unfortunately, human nature is to find the least line of resistance.
Yes, of
to
course.
Do what's easy. Yeah, yeah. Which is
we're meant to be conserving energy.
Yeah, and that's why it's called the comfort zone. Mm. But you've got to keep pushing yourself to be closer to your stretch zone and keep challenging yourself.
So how would we challenge ourselves just on a daily? Give some ideas.
So face into your fears, I suppose, is a good thing. So if you take all the topics we talked there earlier about this, the politics at work, start to challenge yourself to notice these things. You don't have to change the world, but just make that incremental ask. Ask for one more thing. You know, if you needed 2 more people in your team, go for 3 this time and see what happens. You know, I'm not suggesting that you go, right, this year I'm going to climb Kilimanjaro. You know, make sure it's appropriate stretch for you, because otherwise you'll end up in your panic zone. Just think of the things that you've not challenged yourself on and go for one of those. Pick that person that you really know you ought to have a better relationship with at the office and make it your business to go and build that relationship and think about how you're going to do that. That stuff, if you put that stuff on your radar, that's going to make a difference and help you raise the bar, as long as you go about it in an emotionally intelligent way and that you plan to do it, so you're conscious of it, do it, and then reflect on how it went afterwards. Because I think it's, I can't remember whose quote it is, but, oh, it's Einstein's quote.
Of course.
It's an Einstein quote. We've got so many. I love this one. So the definition of insanity is to keep doing what you've always done and expect different results. And so it links all the way back to the stuff at the beginning of the conversation about the gender pay gap. If you want to change this gender pay gap that may be happening in your life, it's your responsibility to do something about it. Don't wait for this lady from the BBC to carve out the pathway, because it won't make any difference in your world. It's in your zone of control to do something about it. If you're that bothered about it, do something about it yourself.
Thank you so much. The negotiation book, Practical Steps to Becoming a Master or Mistress Negotiator, is published by LID Publishing. Thank you so much for coming on to Gorgeous Entrepreneurs.
Thank you for having me.
There are always amazing women to be found on RadioGorgeous.com.